from the Southeast Asian capital city of the land of 7,107 islands of Philippines, Manila, I'm Art Bell. Howdy, everybody. How you doing? It's another weekend of Coast to Coast AM. It's my pleasure, my honor to be here escorting you through the weekend. And there's an awful lot to talk about, that's for sure. Next hour, we're going to have Rick Strassman here, and we're going to talk with Rick about all kinds of interesting things, all sorts of, I don't know if interesting is the right word. I would say more like exotic things. I think that'd be the way to put it. In the meantime, let's take a quick look at, before we do, the webcam photograph right now is by request of many out there. It's a simple shot of my living room. People have been eternally curious about where I live over here, so I will try and put from time to time different shots of different areas in which I live. And of course, it is a very different part of the world over here. But I think you'll agree I'm not suffering greatly. So that's just a shot of my my living room. And in the meantime, there's a lot to worry about potentially in the Gulf. Tropical Storm Ernesto gathered strength as it steamed through the Central Caribbean toward Jamaica on Saturday, threatens to enter the Gulf of Mexico in the first hurricane of the 2006 Atlantic season. Ernesto could grow into a Category 3 hurricane by even as early as Thursday, menacing a broad swath of the Gulf Coast, including hurricane-ravaged New Orleans. The U.S. National Hurricane Center in Miami forecast Category 3 Hurricane Katrina struck the city a year ago on Tuesday. Now, despite aggressive efforts to repair the New Orleans levee system following the destruction of by Hurricane Katrina, it wasn't clear yet whether it could withstand a hurricane with heavy storm surge this year, according to the head of the Army Corps of Engineers, who conceded Saturday. That would be General Strock said the agency was carefully tracking Tropical Storm Ernesto, which was in the Caribbean, projected to reach hurricane strength on Tuesday. It was on track to enter the Gulf of Mexico, but it was too early to tell whether the storm would strike the southern U.S. Now, if you're like me and you track these things very carefully, you've already gone to the National Hurricane Center, and the National Hurricane Center, in its extended forecast, certainly thinks that it's going to threaten New Orleans, and I don't want to scare the hell out of anybody there. Probably scared enough as it is, but if you look at the forecast track or what they think it's going to do, it pretty well centers, it seems to me, on New Orleans. Now, it's very early, obviously, to worry about anything like that, but just looking at that storm track is enough to give you the heebie-jeebies after watching all of that coverage last year. Hope we don't have to see it again this year. And I hope those levees hold. Israeli aircraft fired two missiles early Sunday into an armored car, which unfortunately belonged to not any bad guys, but the Reuters news agency, wounded five people, including two cameramen. Palestinian witnesses and hospital officials said the Israeli army didn't realize the car's passengers were journalists and only attacked because the vehicle was seeming to be driving in a suspicious manner near Israeli troops, and that was enough for them. Confusion over John Mark Carr's legal representation continued Saturday, as a Colorado attorney denied reports that she will help two California lawyers defend the suspect in the slaying of six-year-old JonBenet Ramsey. Public defender Seth Temin has insisted his office is in fact Carr's sole representative, but California attorneys Jamie Harmon and Patience Van Zant have said that Carr has hired them. So I guess there'll be a fight over who helps him out. Cape Canaveral, a gigantic lightning bolt hit just in the area of the launch. Such a big lightning bolt, so powerful, that NASA has decided as a result to postpone the launch. First time that has ever happened as a result of a single lightning strike. Iran's hardline president on Saturday inaugurated a heavy water production plant. This is bad. The facility, the West fears, is going to be used to develop nuclear bombs as Tehran remains defiant ahead of a UN broad deadline that could lead to sanctions. The UN has called on Tehran to stop the separating process of uranium enrichment, which also, of course, can be used to create nuclear weapons by Thursday or face economic and political sanctions. Anybody taking bets on whether they will stop? Now, this is sort of an interesting one. Jim, I think it's Bensman, B-E-N-S-M-A-N, thought that his suggestion during a public hearing was harmless enough. Instead of building a channel so that migratory fish could go around a dam on the Mississippi River and just, he said, get rid of the dam. Now, these days, I guess that's like mentioning the word bomb as you're about to board an aircraft. I don't know. Anyway, the environmental activist found himself in hot water, drawing FBI scrutiny to see whether he had any terrorist intentions. And on that note, we'll take a break, be right back, and take a look, as Paul would say, at the rest of the news. As I mentioned, in the next hour, Rick Strassman will be here, and we'll talk about something exotic. I guess that's the right word. DMT is a drug, and so I want to warn everybody that we are going to... It's called the spirit molecule. Now, there are a lot of people who believe that DMT is something that will open a gate to elsewhere. And by the way, that's something we're going to talk about tomorrow night. We're going to have open lines tomorrow night. We're going to be talking, hopefully. We're going to have a special line open. In fact, just all the lines. Will be open for people who believe they have had conscious travel to another universe. Most modern theoretical physicists believe that we have as many as 11 or more parallel universes. We've had sort of lots of stories, so I know there are going to be lots of stories of people who... And the reason I put in conscious is because I don't want to hear about dreams. Dreams could be travel. I acknowledge that, but on the other hand, they could also be just dreams. So what I want to hear from tomorrow night are people who have had conscious slips, movements, extended periods of time, short periods of time, into obviously another place. Hope you're following me here. By the way, I haven't done enough open lines, and so we're going to do open lines here very shortly, and then tomorrow night we'll do a whole night of open lines, following a short visit by Whitley Strieber. For the first time, scientists have been able to use satellite data to detect changes in our Earth's surface caused by a massive earthquake. Now, these are the GRACE satellites, a pair of satellites, and they look at gravity changes, specifically gravity changes, from the Sumatra-Andaman earthquake, the big one. The discovery, reported in the latest issue of the journal Science, well-respected journal, signifies a new use for the data from NASA's two GRACE satellites and offers a possible new approach to understanding how earthquakes work. The research paints a clearer picture of how the Earth changed after the December 04 Sumatra-Andaman earthquake, the 9.1 magnitude trembler in the Indian Ocean that caused a deadly tsunami, killing, we now know, about 230,000 people, displacing more than a million. Centered off the west coast of northern Sumatra, the event followed the slipping of two continental plates along a massive fault under the seafloor. Now, this slippage occurred along about 750 miles of the line where the Indian plate slides under the Burma plate, a process called subduction. The quake raised the seafloor in the region by several meters for thousands of square miles. The earthquake changed the gravity in that part of the world in two ways that they were able to discern. First, the quake triggered the massive uplift of the seafloor. That would be changing the geometry of the region and altering previous GPS satellite measurements of the area. Those changes were detectable by GRACE's instruments. And second, the density of the rock beneath the seafloor was changed after the slippage, and an increase in decrease and or decrease in density does indeed produce a detectable gravity change, and they have detected it. An Iraq War veterans group says the call-up of thousands of Marines from the Individual Ready Reserve announced by the Pentagon the other day is, they say, one of the last steps before resorting to a draft. The move should serve as a wake-up call to America, said John Soltz, an Army captain who serves in Iraq and heads the group VoteVets.org, which raises funds for Iraq and Afghanistan vets running for Congress. Today's announcement that thousands of Marines in the Individual Ready Reserve are going to be called back to go to Iraq is proof that our military is overextended and there is no plan for victory in Iraq. While the Pentagon has repeatedly maintained the armed forces have met their recruiting and retention goals, Soltz says today's actions, speaking of a few days ago now, obviously speak louder than words. The IRR, our reservists who have returned to civilian life, don't drill on any sort of regular basis, and prior to the Iraq War, were rarely ever called to active duty. The Army has been dipping into their IRR pool since shortly after the beginning of the war, but today, the Marine Corps said they also plan to call thousands of these traditionally last resort troops back to active duty. So what he says, if you think about it, makes an awful lot of sense, doesn't it? That if they're taking this step, this final resort step, then they're probably getting pretty close to a draft, no matter what they say. Or how's this? Big Brother, watching you for sure by 2008. That would be the year a proposed requirement that event data recorders, or EDRs for short, would become mandatory standard equipment in all new cars and trucks. And it's going to become law unless public outrage somehow stops it. EDRs are little black boxes just like airplanes have. They can record a variety of things, including how fast you drive and whether you buckle up for safety or not. The National Highway Traffic Administration wants EDRs to be installed in every new vehicle, beginning with model year 2008, on the theory that, well, the information will help crash investigators more accurately determine the hows and whys of accidents. I suppose that is true. So once again, this would be a safety and freedom trade-off, right? But EDRs could and likely will be used for other purposes as well. Tied into GPS navigation computers, why, EDRs could give interested parties the ability to take automatic ticketing to the next level. Since the data recorders can continuously monitor most of the operating parameters of a vehicle as it travels, and the GPS unit can, of course, precisely locate the vehicle in real time, wherever it happens to be at any given moment, any and all incidents of speeding could be, well, immediately detected and a piece of paper issued to the offender faster than he could hit the brake. And that's even if he knew that he was in the crosshairs, which, of course, he would not. Probably they'll just erect an electronic debiting system of some sort that ties directly into your checking account, since paperwork could not keep up with the massive uptick in fines that would be generated. Now, I'm going to skip over a lot of other material that I guess I'll hold for tomorrow night, and I really do want to read this one to you. It just, when I first read this, it just flat hit me over the head. Title of the article is Operation Acoustic Kitty. At the height of the Cold War, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, bless their hearts, was willing to try just about anything to gain an advantage over the dreaded commies. The agency, I said commies, communists. The agency considered using exploding cigars or perhaps seashells to remove Cuban leader Fidel Castro. They employed psychics to attempt remote viewing of Russian military secrets. We all know about that one. And the CIA even put the Soviets on the business end of clairvoyant minds to attempt mind control. One of the CIA's most bizarre Cold War efforts was dubbed Operation Acoustic Kitty. In declassified documents from the CIA's Super Secret Science and Technology Directorate, it was revealed that some Cold War era cats were surgically altered, get this, surgically altered to become sophisticated bugging devices. Windowsills, garbage containers, that sort of area, right? The cat was meant to just simply stroll right up to the sensitive conversation completely unnoticed. The clandestine cat's electrical internals would then capture and, of course, relay the audio to awaiting agents. The project was founded and work began in 1961. Former CIA officer Victor Marchetti recounts the story of the acoustic kitty. Quote, they slit the cat open, put batteries in him, wired him up. The tail was used as an antenna. They made a monstrosity. They tested him and tested him. They found that he would walk off the job when he got hungry. So they put together another wire to override that. Finally, they were ready. They took it out to a park bench and said, listen to those two guys. Don't listen to anything else. Not the birds, not the dogs, nor the cats. Just those two guys. After several surgeries and intensive training, the cyborg cat was ready for its first field test. So the CIA drove the cat to a Soviet compound on Wisconsin Avenue in Washington, D.C., and let him out of a parked van across the street. The cat ambled into the road, was immediately struck by a taxi. 5 years of effort and $15 million in spending reduced to roadkill in an instant. Shortly after its demise, a CIA operative returned to the accident site and put the cat's remains into a container to prevent the Soviets from getting their paws on the sensitive and very expensive listening devices. Operation Acoustic Kitty was completely abandoned in 1967, declared an unadulterated failure, possibly due to their embarrassing nature. The documents describing Acoustic Kitty remain partially censored even today. But one document does praise the Acoustic Kitty team for their efforts, saying, quote, the work done on this problem over the years reflects great credit on the personnel who guided it, particularly, then it's blacked out, whose energy and imagination could be models for scientific pioneers. While the memo says that the use of trained cats is possible, it also says that the environmental and security factors in using this technique in a real foreign situation force us to conclude that for our intelligence purposes, it would not be practical. Now, they could have easily, avoided all of this by asking any cat person. Every cat person knows that cats do not come when called, do not do what they are told, operate their own little lives despite what wiring might be up their tail. So, a sad, sad Acoustic Kitty story indeed, but I could have saved them all of that trouble. Let's go to the lines and see what awaits. On the first time caller line, I'm led to understand you may be in New Orleans, Louisiana. Is that correct?
I most certainly am in New Orleans. Good evening, Art, on the 50,000 Blowtorch WWL. This is Eric in New Orleans.
Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
How do you feel tonight? I'm looking at the National Hurricane Center, and despite the caution in the world news right now, National Hurricane Center has this sucker pointed right at New Orleans.
Well, we're prepared. I mean, we always have. I'm almost 30 years old, and this will probably be hurricane number 20 for me in my lifetime. So, you know, I am accustomed to dealing with them coming at us. And actually, after Katrina, you know, I kind of know where the water level is. I know where sea level is, and I know where a foot above sea level is in the inner city.
Mm-hmm. In the event of a
levee breach, I know how deep it could get, basically.
Mm-hmm. In the event of a levee breach, like the one that you had previously, how deep does it get? How quickly?
I'll give you the frame of reference for me. I live, in essence, about 3.5 miles as a crow would fly from the levee breach on the 17th Street Canal. And it took roughly from Monday afternoon at the time that the levee breach occurred till probably Thursday before it maxed out at a height of about 5.5 feet or a depth of 5.5 feet.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. I of course, was very intricately involved in the coverage of that. I was on the air during it, and I noted when that levee breach occurred, I was watching very carefully, and there was a single brief mention of the fact that there might have been a levee breach. But then the news went completely blank for about 24 hours. They didn't say a word about the levee breach.
I am amazed that you brought that up, Art.
Do you remember that?
Well, yes, I myself was covering the storm as well for WABC New York and Israeli National Radio, giving them regular reports. They'd call me and I'd tell them how deep it was getting, how fast. And and I had people, you know, from around the world telling me that there was a breach in the 17th Street Canal. Now, these people, I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure if they really know what the 17th Street Canal would look like, because there was definitely confirmation that there was an overtopping, which is a lot different than a breach. You know, an overtopping ends when the water goes down.
That's
so,
right.
You know, it can be handled a lot differently. So there was an overtopping on the Industrial Canal, and we knew about that. But, yeah, when that came out that evening, initially people were telling me about it, it took roughly 24 hours for word to get out on the ground.
That's a natural fact. Listen, my friend. I've got to go. We've got to take a break. Thank you very much for the call. I'm Art Bell from Manila in the Philippines. This is Coast to Coast AM. During the breaks that we have, they run a little promos for the After Dark newsletter, and they ran one this time. Something about, read what it's like to guest host on Coast to Coast AM. And they were referring to George Knapp, a reporter, a good friend of mine, actually, in Las Vegas. And they said, as he investigates things like Area 51, Bob Lazar, and even Art Bell. So I guess I'm going to have to read that. I wonder what investigation he's done of Art Bell. That should be more than just a little interesting. Anyway, welcome back, everybody. We're going to be doing open lines. Listen, we've got an oil spill here in the Philippines. I understand it has made international news, as it should. About 190,000 liters of oil have been dumped into pristine Philippine coastline waters. And now there's a new leak, according to the Philippine Coast Guard. About 1.7 million liters of oil remain in the hulk of the Solar One vessel, which now sits on the seabed about 640 meters down. That's a long way. The vessel sank south of the Philippine capital, about 500 kilometers south of where I am right now in Manila. Two of the 20 crew members are still missing and presumed dead. Back to the phones in a moment. Fern in St. George, Utah said, Art, I'd love to see the picture of your living room. The picture, though, on the webcam right now is a shot from your roof. That was last week's shot, and what you're seeing, Fern, is cache from your computer. In other words, if what you need to do is, I don't know what kind of browser you have, but you need to go in and clean out the cache, Fern, and then go back and reload it, and you will see the appropriate picture. For some reason, your computer couldn't see the new one, so it put the old one up. That's what cache is. It kind of remembers what was there, and that's what you're seeing. All right, to the phones we go. Let's see where. Let's go to the first-time caller line. You are on the air.
Howdy.
Hello. Howdy.
Is that you? My goodness.
It's me. Question is it you?
It is me. It is me.
Okay. All right.
Has it really been 23 years that you've been on the air?
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It has. I remember when you first started. It's been a long time. And I have never gotten on to speak with you, sir.
Well, here you are.
Here I am. And I've got all my kitties around me. And they're all looking at me like I'm out of my mind, because they can't imagine me being this enthusiastic about anything. Sir, what I wanted to talk to you about is, now that you're outside the United States, what do you think about the medical situation in the United States? Because I got hit by a bus about 3 years ago, and it broke my back, and I've been fighting with not the doctors, but the medical profession and the medical review boards trying to get care, and they won't treat pain at all, and it's been a real drag. My family and I live in a 35-foot camper now because I can't work, and you know, it's like there's this big deal going on about not being willing to treat pain.
Yeah, I'm very well aware of it, sir. Here's what I would say. I would say go to another doctor. That would be my advice. Go to another doctor. There are some doctors that are very intimidated by the DEA. The DEA looks, of course, at any prescription that that a doctor writes. And frankly, they're intimidated. It's really a shame. It's all part of the so-called war on drugs. And they keep very careful records of the prescriptions that doctors write. And if you will talk to your doctor, you'll find that he's probably very intimidated by the DEA. Doctors, given a choice, would almost always act, if they could, without harassment, to write an appropriate prescription for pain. And I think that's like in the high 90 percentile of the doctors. But intimidated as they are by the DEA, they will not. So my only advice to you is to find another doctor who is not intimidated in that way. And I've talked to quite a number of physicians, both on and off the air, and they will all tell you the same thing. Many of them more vocal about it off the air than on, but they generally will tell you the truth if you ask them about it. So, again, my advice to you is to find another doctor, one who is not intimidated. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're very welcome.
I am 48 years old as of 33 days ago. I am almost fluent in Spanish, and I understand you have reported tonight that there is a shortage of troops. I want in.
You want to get in? Well, I would, and you're 48 years old?
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you're past the age where they will take you or not.
Well,
I'm honestly not sure, but you can sure give it a try. Have you been in before?
I have not.
Huh.
However, I was named as an Air Force Academy alternate when I applied there back out of high school.
At 48 years of age, you might find it a little physically intimidating. I mean, boot camp is pretty rough.
Boot camp is pretty rough, but I will tell you that I'm almost fluent in Spanish. I have almost a genius-level IQ. My limitations physically are a herniated disc in my neck, and I need glasses.
Well, they'll give you glasses. I don't know. The herniated disc might keep you out.
Well, there are desk jobs and secret positions, as it were, with the necessity to infiltrate enemy positions, as it were.
Maybe they could use you like the wire you up and use you like the cat.
Say again, please.
Maybe they could wire you up and use you like the cat.
Well, I am the cat. I'm the cat born in the year of the dog. On the cusp, so I'm a crabby cat.
You know, somebody else will pass it along to me, and I'll get it on the air for you. I don't know what the current age restrictions are. I have a feeling the herniated disc probably would keep you out, but you certainly could give it a try. You could give it a shot. You know, it's a funny thing. I was in the Air Force, of course, for 4 years, and I had my turn in the Far East, here in the Far East. That's how I'm so familiar with the Far East and Southeast Asia. I spent a lot of time over here. In fact, I spent 10 years on the island of Okinawa, very similar climate to the Philippines where I am now. And after I got out of the military, I spent a lot of years considering whether I wanted to go back in or not. There were a lot of things about it that I really loved. I just really loved. So what the current age restrictions are for the military, it's probably changing, would be my guess. And you might have a chance of getting in. They are getting a little desperate. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, this is Ken calling from Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
I got a question for you. In light of the terrorists trying to use aircraft, which is their primary weapon, it seems like, to blow up, you know, the aircraft and the shoe bomber and all this stuff. Why are these people having such a hard time believing that the 9/11 attacks were the product of the terrorists?
I don't know.
I've heard people just look me straight in the face and say, you know, the government did it.
I know. Actually, what I get, sir, because I have for a very long time now said that we did not blow ourselves up. And that will earn you emails, many of them, saying you're a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word they use. You're a traitor. If you don't believe we blew ourselves up, you are a traitor.
Well, you know, I don't understand. The only thing I can come close to is the Pearl Harbor deal, where it did strike me funny that the carriers were out.
Well,
You know what I mean? They were out on
Pearl Harbor is a bit of a different situation.
Right.
I don't know how much knowledge there was or was not about what happened at Pearl Harbor prior to the attack. But with regard to 9/11, I think it is, in Occam's razor, I saw the airplanes go into the building.
Mm-hmm.
Is
oh, they say buildings. That they were remote controlled or,
and
all this garbage. I mean,
I know. And there was dynamite planted at the, explosive planted at the base of the building and all the rest of it. I know.
I mean, I don't know. You know, I'm a disabled vet. I'm fully disabled. I was Air Force myself, and I had a vet, another disabled vet, one day over at the VA, just look me right in the face and say, and right in front of her, you know, we're sitting there waiting to get our meds and stuff, and he's telling me that, you know, the government did this stuff, and I'm like, you're in the wrong hospital. You need to be over at the psychiatric one, you know, because I mean, it's so obvious, and like I said, they're using them for weapons now. It's proven.
I know. All right. Thank you very much. I've been through this now for a number of years with this group, and it is an interesting group of people. Not all of them are nutcases by a long shot. There are some fairly credible people out there who seem still inclined to believe, and it is a belief system, that the United States orchestrated its own terrorist act, that the United States blew up the buildings. They had were the ones who crashed a plane into the Pentagon, were the ones who were trying to destroy the White House with the plane that went down in Pennsylvania, you know, on and on and on. And taking a position like the one that man just took and the one I have, and that is that it is exactly what it seemed to be, Occam's razor. It is those men who blew up our landmarks, killed our citizens. It is exactly what it seems to be. It seems to be a very unpopular position. I mean, it is a small but very vocal minority that believes we did this to ourselves. And they don't have reasonable conversations with you if you take the position that, well, gee, no, we didn't. It was done to us by terrorists. Then you are a traitor. You are a traitor. Nothing short. You are a traitor to the United States, and that's exactly the kind of email that I receive from that group. And I've stopped even trying to have conversations with them because it's simply impossible. You know, you can't get anywhere with somebody who will continually say, "Look at the evidence," which I have endlessly, and interviewed people, and they will just sit there and call you a traitor. Again and again and again. And what defense, what possible defense is there against something? Well, no, I'm not. I saw those planes. I've seen the people. I've read the report. I've looked into it very carefully. In fact, they even claim that it was not an airplane that crashed into the Pentagon. Why, they can't find the pieces and parts, they say. It was to the Rockies. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
This is Jackie in Colorado.
Hi, Jackie.
And, Art, I've been listening to you since 94 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost got through one night, but I guess it didn't really work. Anyway, I was in California at that time. First of all, I just want to say congratulations on your recent marriage. And
thank you.
I felt like it was such an important blessing for you at that time. I was just so happy for you.
You have no idea.
I'm sure. I just feel it in my heart that it's perfect. But I just wanted to share that with you and to tell you how much I enjoyed your program over the years. And I love listening to the cat stories because I'm a new cat person, and I'm on my third generation with, you know, the children of the children of the children. So I'm
learning
about
that. Well, then you two, by now, you two could have saved the CIA all that money and told them that cats were not going to stroll up to the appointed two people and sit there and monitor a conversation. That's just not a cat.
Right. Well, anyway, that's basically. And then also I had an opportunity to talk to my dish provider recently, and I talked to a girl, and her name is Chicky. And so she's in Manila, and she didn't know that you were there, so she was going to tune into your program. And she told me like three times, "My name is Chicky."
Chicky.
I go, okay. And
well,
actually,
it's very interesting. Thank you. I guess Dish may be then contracting with some people here in the Philippines to do their they're troubleshooting or late night answering for them. I don't know. Gals over here tend to have names that you don't believe. Names like Honey and Sugar and, you know, names like that, that we would sort of laugh off a little bit. But in fact, those names are quite normal here. And for some reason, with girls here in the Philippines, they use American first names. Of course, last name is Filipino, but the first name inevitably is something like that, something like Sugar or Candy or something like that, that almost would seem fake to you, but it's not. These are very, I guess for a generation now, have been very, very popular names here in the Philippines. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How are you doing?
I'm quite well, sir.
Yeah, this is Gus from Texas.
Yes, Gus.
Yes, I noticed earlier you were talking about New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to say I was there for a little bit this year, doing work down there for a major gypsum company.
Mm-hmm.
And it really depressed me the longer I stayed there.
Right.
Because you got to see the destruction up hand. Even as I just went up the road to just a small deli just to buy some sandwich stuff or whatever, or I went over to the grocery store and buy, you know, even some frozen food or something just to have in my trailer there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my wife come in and we were going, you know, she's from Texas also. She went in and she went, you know what, no one laughs here or anything else. And I was sitting going back and going, just saying to myself, well, I can see why they don't have anything to laugh about. They just got destroyed.
Yeah, that's right. The city, beyond any shadow of a doubt, or at least some certain portions of it, were absolutely destroyed. And what wasn't destroyed had to be leveled and completely rebuilt. Now, I hope to God the levees hold this time. But with the global changes going on, and these are global changes, in our climate, in the ocean levels and all the rest of it, how long New Orleans is going to remain viable, I think, is a big question. Now, I recall our government making noises about restoring New Orleans to its absolute former glory. Well, that has not yet occurred, of course, and it really doesn't look like it is going to occur. I suppose eventually, if enough storms miss for long enough and the Army Corps of Engineers manages to get the levees high enough, it might occur. But it's going to be a long time. It's obviously not occurring as quickly as the government had hoped that it would. And frankly, I wondered at the time about that statement at all. And there may have been a moment or two when our government, somebody in our government, should have considered the possibility that it might not be wise to restore New Orleans to its former glory. It might be wiser to move it a little bit and rebuild it in a place where that was unlikely to happen for a number of years yet. Let us go to, let's see, this is an interesting one. Former guest, I guess, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Art, how are you this evening?
I'm all right.
All right, good to talk to you. Hope you're well over there. I just got an order to shoot a harp signal at 73.5 degrees, 180.0, 286.3 degrees.
Oh, wait a minute, Joe. Who are you, Joe, exactly, and to be given such an order?
Art, I was a guest on your show about 7 or 8 months ago, and I had to go through some clearances to get permission to be on your show.
Uh-huh. And you work for the HARP project?
Well, I'm part of the affiliate of one of the agencies for HARP.
Okay, and give me those longitude and latitude.
I can't remember this because we talked a couple times.
Yeah, that's all right. Give me the longitude and latitude again, please.
Latitude and longitude, 73.5, 180.0, 286.3. Shoot at 73.40. Hour of angle, 100.5 degrees, 100.4, minus 100.4 degrees.
All right, that's a lot of numbers. We don't have a lot of time. Where is that, basically?
2740. They're trying to. What they're trying to do is calm those people down over there.
Where is this specifically? I don't have a map in front of me. So where?
That is Tehran, Iran.
It's Tehran, Iran. So you're telling me, Joe, that Dr. Joe, I'll call you, that you've got orders to basically fire HAARP at Iran. Is that correct?
Well,
I've got a break right here. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.